Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Oregon is celebrated in its leadership on addressing climate change. This winter, the Portland City Council unanimously approved a first-in-the-country ban on new bulk fossil fuel storage facilities. Last year, the Oregon legislature approved a landmark bill that commits the state to eliminate its use of coal power by 2030 and double the amount of clean, renewable energy serving Oregonians to 50% by 2040. But beneath the veneer of this cheery news for the environment, there are other actors trying to undo these achievements. This morning, we talk with Dan Sears, Columbia Riverkeepers Conservation Director, about Portland General Electric's plan to replace the Boardman coal-fired plant with one fired by natural gas. We'll also talk about a lawsuit filed in January by the Western States Petroleum Association, Columbia Pacific Building Trades Council, and the Portland Business Alliance to challenge Portland's historic fossil fuel storage ban. Dan, welcome back to Locus Focus.
It's great to be here.
So we were just celebrating towards the end of the year about all the wonderful things we're doing, despite the fact that Donald Trump was going to be president of the United States. What's your take on what's happening, the developments that have ensued since January 1st of this year?
We didn't think the fossil fuel industry was going to give up the Northwest without a fight, and we're seeing their strategy now start to play out. I think you've identified the two first things that we're aware of where there is an effort to undo, reverse the very significant step that the city of Portland took with the fossil fuel resolution, which is really amazing because it's a binding ordinance that forevermore restricts and really prohibits the build-out of large fossil fuel infrastructure in the city of Portland. So things like large oil train terminals cannot be built in the city of Portland because of this ordinance. And that's really significant for us at Columbia Riverkeeper because the Columbia River is such a targeted conduit for very large amounts of oil, coal, gas turned into methanol. All of these fossil fuels are really being pushed our way because we're the shortest path between the middle of the continent, which has huge reserves of fossil fuels, and overseas markets that would like to burn it. So what the city of Portland did, it's not surprising that it drew a challenge from the fossil fuel industry. The Western States Petroleum Association is leading a challenge to try to reverse this decision at the Land Use Board of Appeals. We haven't seen their argument yet. We just know that they've appealed, and we've seen the record, which is really lengthy. It's thousands of pages, and I would characterize it as being dominated by people who supported the city of Portland's unanimous action. And so I think they have a heavy lift to show that a mistake was made. Certainly the city was aware that a challenge could come as part of this landmark action, and we're seeing that now. And I think the other piece of it that's fascinating is watching PGE essentially pretend as if none of this happened and try to hook up Portland to being purchasers of fracked gas powered electricity for the long haul. And that's also playing out right now in the start of 2017.
Well, who are the Western States Petroleum Association?
It's an industry group that speaks up for entities like Kinder Morgan, Chevron, Phillips 66. They testified in front of the city of Portland, urging the city to allow essentially unlimited expansion of fossil fuels. Their argument has been that this could stop the fossil fuel industry from becoming more seismically safe. It could choke off fossil fuels to the rest of the state. Those are both issues that the city took a hard look at when it was developing the ordinance. And what they found is, one, fossil fuel use per capita is already in decline. And so we are well positioned to begin a managed decline of fossil fuel use. And so it's the idea of, you know, sort of an unlimited expansion in the Portland area really wasn't reflective of what we need here. And then, you know, secondly, they argued that it would have this impact on the rest of the state. Again, the city took a hard look at that, and that's why they allowed existing fossil fuel infrastructure to maintain its operation and to continue moving forward.
Just not to expand.
Not to expand. And then the question of whether or not you need to expand dramatically fossil fuel infrastructure in order to make it more seismically safe, it's sort of absurd, a little bit on its face, but that argument didn't hold water. The fossil fuel industry had, you know, decades of unfettered expansion capability in the city of Portland, and they didn't upgrade their tanks. And so communities like Linton remain really at risk for very large problems if we had an earthquake. And so that's going to have to be dealt with through other means, through essentially mandating that we see improved storage of very dangerous fuels.
So it was the representative from the Western States Petroleum Association, the guy who said he felt like he'd arrived at a barbecue and he was the meat?
That was actually a representative of Kinder Morgan who said that. I can't recall his name, but it was, I think it was Mather was his name. And it was an argument that obviously didn't carry well with the city commission, which
kind of convinced him in going the opposite direction.
Yeah, counterproductive for sure.
Because he was saying we need 40-50% increase in order to make it pencil out. And I saw Amanda Fritz's eyebrows raise when he said that.
Yeah.
Oh, then we don't have to do any increase.
Exactly. And I think it also was in such stark contrast to the overwhelming testimony, heartfelt and detailed testimony explaining why the city should and could take this step. And the city staff did a lot of research on their own to develop what they thought was a kind of middle path. You know, it's not shutting down all fossil fuels immediately, which some people think is really where we should be going. Rather, it said, you know, we're at the very least, we're not going to be building huge things like new oil train terminals like we see in Vancouver, in Portland. And putting that into the city's code is a really important way of ensuring that whatever happens at the state and federal level, we have a real bulwark here in Portland.
Well, I found we'll talk about the guy from Kinder Morgan for a second who said he felt like the barbecue meat at that hearing. When I heard him say that, it really made me think that the fossil fuel industry in the Northwest is feeling a bit endangered. And I wonder if that is part of the reason why they're appealing this decision by the city of Portland.
You know, I think they're appealing the city of Portland's decision because Portland sits at the juncture of major rail infrastructure and a deep water port. And so there's only a few places like this. And I don't think they have any real concern about us stopping fossil fuel use in the near term. I think their concern is being able to get this stuff on the market. Kinder Morgan is proposing massive fossil fuel infrastructure around the region, including a huge pipeline that would be used to move oil to the coast and export it all over the world.
You're talking about the one that would go to Burnaby.
That's right. And so we're, you know, when we hear them saying, you know, oh, poor us, we're poor little oil companies that are being beat up by the city of Portland, it's absurd. And their real plan has always been for the last 10 years or more to create a massive throughway through the Pacific Northwest for oil, coal, natural gas in all their forms to go into the global market, to be burned, and to continue to pollute the atmosphere in ways that are going to be devastating for future generations.
Well, even in Vancouver, BC, which has a much vaster fossil fuel infrastructure than Portland has, they have an oil refinery, they have major pipelines, the Trans Mountain Pipeline, which Kinder Morgan wants to double in size, is already pumping a lot of oil from the tar sands. And even there, I've heard Kinder Morgan representatives act like they're really beleaguered.
Yes, and you know, maybe there is some truth in the fossil fuel industry feeling beleaguered as renewable energy prices continue to plummet, which is, as we just heard in the previous piece on Air Cascadia, you know, Robert McCullough doing a study that shows that natural gas doesn't have to be an option for replacing out-of-date and bad infrastructure ideas like the Columbia Generating Station, for instance. And the same argument could go for the coal-fired power plant at Boardman. So certainly the coal industry is faltering, and that's an important decision that we're making as a nation not to burn more coal, and that we made as a state last year with the Coal to Clean bill. But it's not enough. We have to look at these other fossil fuels like liquefied natural gas, like crude oil from the Bakken region that has been exploding wherever it moves, including here in Oregon and Mosier, and do something tangible about it. And so as we made those steps in late 2016, and we got, for instance, the fossil fuel ordinance passed in Portland, the fossil fuel industry is trying to stop the bleeding in one sense and also try to, I think, really frighten away any other city from doing the same. And they're not just trying to frighten away other cities, they're actually trying to preempt other cities. They've put forward a bill in the Oregon legislature that would preempt any city from doing something like what Portland did. And in fact, it's very broadly written and would effectively preempt any city from applying any rule to a fossil fuel project, which is a wild legislative overreach. And I don't think that bill will really see the light of day, but it's just so broad and clumsy. But it shows the way they are thinking, that local towns and cities like Portland, like Mosier, like Vancouver, Washington, shouldn't have the right to say yes or no to these very large projects.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Dan Sears, who's the Columbia River Keepers Conservation Director, and we're looking at the, let's say, the pushback to some really progressive moves that have been made both here in Portland and across the state to curtail our fossil fuel usage as well as building fossil fuel infrastructure. Do you think that Donald Trump's administration is giving a green light to the forces that want to try to stand up to the power of local communities to control their own destiny around fossil fuels?
I don't know yet, but yes, I would imagine the Trump administration will do everything it can to push these projects forward.
I guess there's two parts to this, because actually Donald Trump can't affect Oregon land use laws or Portland's zoning laws. However, it does seem that his election has emboldened people, forces to fight back against some of these very progressive moves that have happened.
Yeah, and what you see is, you know, there was a story on Fox News late in 2016 where they were sort of putting forward this idea from a Republican attorney general, former attorney general from Washington, Rob McKenna, who was saying, well, maybe we can turn ports into railroads and give them the same sort of preemption power that railroads have. So, you know, towns like Portland and Vancouver wouldn't have the ability to block the major fossil fuel projects. So I would not put it past this Congress to try to roll back the authority that we have. But as long as we have it, you know, cities like Portland and states like Oregon should do everything in their power to stop these projects, which are, again, we're talking about not just what we use now, but a long-term, decades-long commitment to becoming a throughway for fossil fuels. And in the case of the PGE-proposed Cardi generating station out near Boardman, using the electricity from fracked gas electricity, fracked gas power. These are big decisions that are being foisted on the region, and we have to make them while we have the authority to do it. I think it's a reason why we've been hoping to see decisions on these major fossil fuel projects come as quickly as possible, to get them decided, to get them, you know, off the map, essentially. And we made a lot of progress in 2016, but some of the really major ones remain, and they continue to push forward.
Well, I want to get back to this idea that the ports could be sort of reconfigured so that they're like the railroads and they're basically their own fiefdom. Would that happen on the federal level, or is that something that only could happen on the local level? I mean, who would decide what?
Essentially, it would be Congress taking away the authority of the states and saying, we are now going to regulate these things like railroads, and ports are now, you know, exclusively the purview of the federal government. You know, they did this with liquefied natural gas terminals. California was busily rejecting LNG import terminals in the early 2000s, early and mid-2000s. And in 2005, Congress changed the law, stripping states of their right to site or not liquefied natural gas terminals. And what that did was create a really very difficult process where the states didn't have the ability to make a proposal rational, to say, look, we have an oyster bed here, you really should avoid that. All of that sort of fundamental site development process was left to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and states were left with just essentially the ability to say yes or no. And thankfully, they were left that ability to say yes or no. In the case of the Bradwood LNG facility, the state actually said no here in Oregon to an LNG import terminal. It actually took FERC saying no to Jordan Cove.
It became an export terminal, right? I mean, import/export terminal.
Bradwood never got to make the flip. It was rejected before they ever made the turn. Oregon LNG and Jordan Cove LNG both were proposed as export. And now, just a couple weeks ago, we see Jordan Cove refiling, and certainly a signal that they see a friendlier FERC in the Trump administration. They were unbelievably rejected by FERC, which never says no to anything. Somehow the one project in Oregon managed to be so unsuitable that FERC actually turned it down. And so we see them once again gearing up to push forward. And I think, you know, from our perspective on the Columbia River, we see a different version of that with methane to methanol terminals here. While we stopped Oregon LNG in Warrington and the pipelines associated with it, there are two methanol refineries on the Columbia River that would be the largest of their kind in the world. And there are two of them proposed on the lower Columbia River that would take fracked gas, turn it to methanol, and ship it overseas. The two projects are essentially being supported by the Chinese government, the Chinese Academy of Sciences. And we expect a decision today on whether the first of those in Kalama will be permitted under the Shorelines Management Act by Cowlitz County, Washington, and the Port of Kalama. So we're at the Port of Kalama. We're watching closely at these projects, which are, I guess I'll put it this way, some of the damage is not being done by the Trump administration. Some of it's being done by our own decision makers here in the Northwest who are not holding the line and not making the right decisions about these projects. And PGE is going to be right here in the Portland area asking the Oregon Public Utilities Commission to sign off on a major expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure in eastern Oregon.
Actually, there's a link between PGE and the Kalama methanol refinery as well. Let's talk a little bit about that one.
I'm not sure what...
Okay, well, my understanding is that PGE is all for expanding the infrastructure, the pipelines that would go to feed the methanol refinery, yeah, because there's not enough infrastructure to get all the methane that they need to make methanol.
Yeah, so they're sort of related and a little bit unrelated in that the gas, that the infrastructure, the pipeline infrastructure in the Northwest is essentially running at capacity, with the exception that PGE's proposal at Boardman to build 1,310 megawatts of fracked gas powered electricity plants, that has its own devoted pipeline that comes from the eastern side of the state, which is not as constrained as the pipelines we have over here.
I was thinking about Northwest Natural Gas.
Yes.
They're the player.
Northwest Natural Gas is certainly a player in all of this, where Northwest Natural Gas would, they would be providing some gas to the methanol refinery, or at least giving up their rights to gas to allow the methanol refinery to proceed. They would also be directly supplying gas to the second methanol refinery proposal at Port Westward. They operate both the pipelines that come into Port Westward, Oregon. There's one from the Washington side that crosses underneath the river called the KB pipeline, and there's a second that's proposed to be expanded coming down from the Mist storage field in sort of the Coast Range, dropping into Port Westward. PGE's interest in, so they're sort of two separate issues, except the underpinning pipeline infrastructure is going to, you know, what may be the first mover may be methanol refining. And those methanol refineries may be the big anchor customer that justifies a dramatic expansion of pipelines in the Northwest. Once you have those, then you have ample gas for things like new natural gas-fired power plants, not just in Boardman, but even down the I-5 corridor, targeted to help replace coal that would be retired in, from Montana, from Colstrip. And so we're still at this point where the decisions we make about pipelines in the ground could shape what type of energy we're using for decades to come. And for 2017, I think fracked gas and dealing with PGE's proposal is going to be on the front burner here in Portland.
I want to just do a little bit more about the methanol refinery, because it's just starting, I think, to get some daylight compared to all the publicity that the Vancouver Energy oil by train terminal in Vancouver has gotten. Is there enough, because it seems like there's a lot of opposition in the Kalama Longview area to that refinery. But when I went to the hearing, beginning of January, it seemed like the elected officials in Cowlitz County are all very solidly behind it. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they've been having any stormy town hall meetings like U.S. Representatives have been having in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Kalama is a small town, so people tend to be fairly polite to one another. But in their polite way, people in Kalama have been very vocal. There's, you know, it's a town of 2,000 people, over a quarter of whom have signed statements in opposition to the project. And that's a big number in a little town. People, you know, stand and hand out coffee at the local intersections, talking to their neighbors about why the methanol refinery would produce dangerous levels of particulate matter, how the pipeline would involve eminent domain against local landowners. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There would be more pipelines that would involve even more eminent domain for people in Cowlitz County. So far, the elected leaders in Cowlitz County who are responsible for making this decision, first of all, they deferred the first land use decision, the shorelines decision, to a hearings examiner. His opinion is due today. We expect that any moment. So if you see me checking my phone, it's because it might be coming in.
Let us know as soon as you find out.
Yes, live on the air, we'll announce. But the pushback has to happen at the state and regional level. You know, Governor Inslee initially supported the methanol refinery in Kalama, I think without realizing the stakes for how much fracked gas is involved. And still throughout the region, you know, natural gas, I've been deliberately trying to call it fracked gas on this interview, or methane gas, has been branded in a way that it has this cleaner image. We know that not to be true at this point. We know that it's nearly as destructive, if not just as destructive, as coal for the climate. Not all gas is created the same, and so some of it actually is worse than coal, depending on how much methane is being leaked in the atmosphere and the production and transmission of gas. All of this stuff has been hidden from review in both the methanol terminal and the proposed natural gas-fired power plant out in Boardman. And so what we're dealing with is our company is saying, we have this clean, nice, low-carbon natural gas plant, whether it's a power plant or a methanol refinery, and that's just it's not accurate. These are going to be some of the most polluting, in terms of the climate impacts, facilities in the Northwest. The methanol refinery in Kalama would use a third as much fracked gas as the entire state of Washington. So it would be consuming a third as much gas as more than all the power plants in the state of Washington, more than all the homes in the state of Washington, more than all the businesses in the state of Washington. It's a dramatic shift in the supply and demand picture for the Northwest, and it would require replumbing the pipeline system in the Northwest. They've been denying that. And it's certainly clear that if you had two methanol refineries, you would absolutely need much more pipeline capacity to deliver that amount of gas. And with those two refineries put together, you're essentially talking about roughly the same amount of gas that we would have seen moving in an LNG export terminal.
So what is this methanol being made for?
Ostensibly, they're saying it would be made for plastic.
Shipped to China.
Yes, it would. The methanol would go to China, be converted to olefin, and from that turned into plastic. But methanol is also a transportation fuel, so it really they could use it for whatever they want. They claim it would be for plastic, and it's hard to overstate the size of these facilities and how much they've flown under the radar. And so, you know, people in Kalama have been very vocal. The landowners, the few of them that there are who have been engaged on this, they've been very vocal. The pipeline would go through a cemetery. It's a very large, very high impact project that sits in the shadow of two others: the coal terminal in Longview, the oil by rail facility in Vancouver, and sandwiched in between them, this major fracked gas to methanol refinery has gone somewhat unnoticed. But for your listeners, I think, you know, whatever happens with the shorelines decision today, the Department of Ecology in Washington is a statewide agency that needs to review and make its own decision about whether or not this project complies with the Shorelines Management Act for the state of Washington. And so, you know, they listen to the public, they listen to Governor Inslee. And so this isn't a case where Governor Inslee is a, you know, like the oil terminal, where he's a judge who needs to stay out of the fray. You know, he already dipped his toe in it. When he, you know, said that he thinks this could be a great idea, he needs to hear from all his folks in Southwest Washington who are hearing this interview. They should be weighing in with Governor Inslee and letting him know that a methanol terminal in Kalama would severely undermine Washington's climate goals and the health of the Columbia River and the public safety of those nearby.
Now, what about my Oregonian listeners? Do they have any input in this at all?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the other amazing thing about these methanol refineries is that there are two of them, both of which are enormous. The second one at Port Westward hasn't made any discernible progress in gaining permits, but it's a huge threat. And these two projects combined are going to require some type of new pipeline to feed them. BARC has been really watching closely for a resurgence of the Palomar pipeline. It would now be called Trail West.
And but so it's the same pipeline.
It's the same pipeline.
And for people who don't know what the Palomar pipeline is, this had to do with LNG.
Exactly. And so it's the same. It's the same basic idea of building a huge new pipeline link between the big pipeline in Eastern Oregon and the big pipeline in Western Oregon, up and over the Cascades, you know, through the Mount Hood National Forest, through the Clackamas River watershed, through these really rugged drainages. And so BARC and all the people they work with are keeping a close eye to see if that pipeline comes back as a way to supply methanol to either the Klamath facility or the Port Westward facility. We know that the pipeline capacity is simply not there to do this amount of methanol export.
Now, I'm curious about the when I went to the hearing in January for the methanol refinery, and that was an air quality hearing. Has that permit been granted yet?
Not yet. We are also looking closely for that one to come out soon. And when it does, you know, they received a lot of commentary about the significant downplaying of local air impacts in that application. It would be, you know, a big source of particulate matter in, you know, in Klamath. It would have a plume of steam, essentially, of water vapor going up as tall as Mount St. Helens. And, you know, it'd also be what they really downplayed was the amount of toxic emissions from that huge facility, including volatile organic compounds, which may be quite a bit higher than they were initially claiming.
Well, what I found disconcerting about that hearing was it was really seemed like it was a collusion between the Air Quality Board and the, I forget, the Northwest Innovation Works. And they, Northwest Innovation Works, did their dog and pony show before the actual testimony started. And the person who was emceeing the whole event from the Air Board seemed to basically be looking, I mean, he was talking about how he was reviewing everything and he found some typos, but he didn't seem to be noticing some of the other scientific quibblings that a lot of people in the audience had.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of concern that the Southwest Clean Air Agency is not going to take a real hard look at this. And so that's why so many people commented and packed that hearing and urged them and, you know, very specifically pointed out where the flaws were. And so we'll see what happens with that. With that decision, you know, when it comes to burning natural gas, again, it has this veneer of being cleaner, but these end up being very large polluters where they are. And it's not just for the methanol terminal. For PGE's proposal out at Boardman, you know, they've already built one of these new natural gas-fired power plants. And this is one of the reasons why we thought the methanol terminal was understating their emissions. PGE was forced to admit that it wasn't operating as they expected. They were producing much higher levels of smog-forming volatile organic compounds than they expected, so much so that they're actually applying to DEQ for permission to pollute more from the first new gas plant at Boardman.
So there's already a gas plant at Boardman?
Yeah.
And then they have one in St. Helens as well, is that correct?
That's right. They have a couple in St. Helens. So to get to Boardman, which is the other big, you know, we'll end up talking in 2017 a lot about fracked gas. You know, we hope that coal and oil are coming to decision points and those projects fall away. But these fracked gas, you know, either export facility with the methanol export refinery or the big PGE. So it's called Cardi. I keep saying Cardi. People ask me what Cardi is. It's PGE's proposal for 1,310 megawatts of new natural gas. 450 megawatts are already built. And it would be right next to where the soon-to-be-retired Boardman coal plant is. So it's all out in Boardman. It's named Cardi for the reservoir that's right there that itself is supplied by the Columbia River. What PGE wants to do is build, in addition to its existing 450-megawatt over-polluting facility, two additional facilities, one that would be increased to 530, and then a whole third one that would be 330 megawatts of peaking power. They're doing all of this, Units 2 and Units 3, and Unit 3, under the umbrella of a site certificate amendment with the Energy Facility Siting Council in Oregon. That's, we think, a real twisting of the rules to say we're going to add 800 some odd megawatts of new natural gas fired power generation, and we're going to call that a site amendment rather than an entirely new site certificate, ends up being important for procedural reasons, because getting a hearing over an amendment is much more difficult than getting a hearing over a new certificate, which is automatically granted. So PGE's plan is, despite Portland's, you know, landmark vote to say, you know, we want to start curbing our fossil fuel use here in the city, they plan to supply that by wire coming from Boardman to the tune of 1,310 megawatts total of gas that would be burned, gas that's sourced from all over Western North America, could be coming from Canada, could be coming from the Rockies. Much of it would be fracked. At least half of it, we think, would be fracked. Sightline did a look at that, Tarika Powell from Sightline, and that was her estimate. It's a little bit hard to tell, but at least half of it would be coming from fracking. And the reason that's so important is the natural gas production process is releasing much higher levels of methane than people initially thought. When we were debating LNG import back in the mid-2000s, we didn't realize that there was so much methane leaking out of the production system. And that methane is 86 times more powerful than carbon dioxide in its global warming potential over the next 20 years. And so in this critical time when we're really trying to make an impact and curb the damage we're doing to our climate system, these methane projects would be belching one of the most powerful, you know, greenhouse gas pollutants into the atmosphere in enormous rates. PGE's proposal at Boardman would be the biggest climate polluter in the state, and easily the biggest polluter. It would probably exceed the existing coal-fired power plant there, which is 550 megawatts. You're replacing 550 megawatts of coal with 1,310 megawatts of fracked gas is a step backward, and that's exactly what people are trying to stop.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Dan Sears, Conservation Director for the Columbia Riverkeeper, and we're talking about the fossil fuel industry's pushback against the very progressive movements made by the city of Portland and the state of Oregon to curb our fossil fuel appetite. Well, PGE likes to present itself as being this very green conscious utility. They have their, I forget the name of the program where you can pay more money and pretend that you're using just renewable energy as opposed to coal or natural gas. How do they reconcile this push to replace a coal-fired plant with natural gas as opposed to looking for more creative ways to actually expand their renewable energy portfolio? And what does it mean if you are subscribing to their renewable program? Are you actually getting anything that's renewable into your the gas in your house?
I think the subscribing to the renewable program is an important signal to the utility, and people are doing it in record numbers. So PGE is trying to make this big commitment to a fracked gas power plant in Boardman at the same time that they have people voluntarily paying more for renewable energy in very large numbers. I think the way they've attempted to reconcile is by saying, this is the only way we can see to meet the capacity generation need, or the power generation needs we forecast. And what's really interesting is they're making this argument to the Public Utility Commission of Oregon. And the Utility Commission has to decide whether it's going to allow PGE to charge you and me, PGE ratepayers, to buy this new fracked gas generation. And they are so far hearing from a lot of unusual folks around the region who are pushing back on PGE's plan and very skeptical of the plan. Sierra Club has hired an expert group called Synapse Economics. They've looked at this and they think PGE has fallen far short of its burden to show that this is something that the Oregon PUC should acknowledge and approve. And part of the reason is PGE had a whole separate plan, which was much more reliant on wind energy and buying it, you know, in this big regional wind market that's growing and growing here. And they chose to opt for natural gas instead. It's a really important time in the next several months for people to be keeping their eye on PGE. Big decisions are being made right now. And the first of those could be the Public Utility Commission, which we are with partners like Sierra Club and 350 and Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility gathering petitions and trying to impress upon Oregon's Public Utility Commission that they should not charge ratepayers for this decades-long commitment to frack gas. And other entities have been weighing in and very, very skeptical that PGE's plans pencil out as being the best option. And then, you know, PGE is also asking for the actual permission from the state of Oregon to build the darn things, which are these big natural gas-fired power plants at Boardman that would require water that ultimately comes from the Columbia River, that require air pollution permits. And we know they've already blown past their first permit with volatile organic compound emissions that are much higher than they expected. These are big decisions that the state will be making. The Public Utilities Commission could be one of the first. DEQ will make the decision about the air permits, and Oregon's Energy Facility Siting Council will make the decision about the actual footprint of the facility. So, you know, no matter how much PGE tries to dress this up, they are going to be increasingly aware that Portlanders don't appreciate being hooked up by wire to a dramatic expansion of fracked gas use and very climate polluting power.
Is the Citizens Utility Board on board with this too?
Yeah, they've expressed a lot of skepticism about it, and at the very least feel like this should not be part of PGE's action plan to be essentially, you know, the market is sort of in flux right now. And I think their argument is this is a big commitment and a risky one to make when there's so much upside potential in both natural gas prices and ultimately carbon pricing overall, that, you know, they say, you know, from just a simple ratepayer perspective, they have a lot of concerns.
Well, this reminds me a bit of the whole push a few years ago for nuclear power as the necessary alternative to fossil fuels. And even James Hansen was a big proponent of nuclear power. I mean, some kind of people who made me nervous, the people who I thought should really know better. And every time I talked to some of them, I'd say, you should live downstream from Hanford and see what you think about nuclear power. And there seemed to be a lot of ignorance about it and a lot of people who don't remember all the big fight against nuclear power in the 70s and 80s. Hillary Clinton is a big backer of natural gas. So is Obama. So this is not just a Trump versus the rest of us issue. This is like a lot of people, you mentioned Jay Inslee was supporting the methanol refinery. So how do we get people on board to recognize, particularly the key people who can make the decisions, to recognize that nuclear, that natural gas is just the new coal?
I think, you know, there are going to be a lot more opportunities for visibility. You know, there's going to be a bunch of activity around Earth Day and making it clear that PGE has this big fracked gas plan. That's a great opportunity for us to get the word out. PGE is sort of out in the community. You know, they're always at my local store signing people up for their 100% renewable program. And usually I try to stop by and just say, hey, you know, I'm really concerned about this. This Cardi proposal, just pass that up the chain, you know. And I think if we can raise the profile of these projects, I mean, the way we learned about how dangerous oil by rail was and what a bad idea was by really digging into proposals here in the Northwest. And once people got to see what this looked like up close and then see what an oil explosion looked like up close, the worm turned very quickly, and the Northwest is adamantly opposed to oil by rail. I think the same can come with natural gas, where, you know, some of these very rural areas like Coos Bay and all along the pipeline route and down in Clatsop County where they dealt with LNG, I mean, they're very savvy when it comes to the false promises of the natural gas industry. And they know full well that it's a climate disaster and a public safety nightmare. And they are, they're in many ways more learned on this issue than we here in the urban area, which has sort of been inundated with the Northwest Natural and PGE marketing. So we've got a chance in 2017 to pierce that and to burst that bubble. And it's a really, really important time to do it, because we just cannot, the decision is being made right now about whether we're going to build out this infrastructure for the next several decades. And, you know, some of this is about export, but some of it is about our own energy choices. And that's the difference between LNG and this. This is a self-inflicted wound where we as PGE customers should not be paying for decades. You know, when I'm in my 60s, do I really want to be paying off a fracked gas power plant? Does that make sense for the climate,
actually,
for my kids?
Reminds me of Whoops, which was the the nuclear power series of plants that were built all around.
You know, whenever I get down, I think about the people who did so much incredible work to, you know, they lost, Trojan was built, it was operating, and they never gave up, and they kept persisting, and Trojan was shut down, and now, you know, the stack is down, the cooling tower, it's, that's a remarkable example of what we can do, and the fact that this work is going to be very long, and there will be really significant dips, and we're facing that now, where the fossil fuel industry is trying to reverse the gains we've made, and you know, there is going to be an adamant movement here in the Northwest to stop that from happening.
Well, I got an email yesterday from Vancouver climate activist Don Steinke. You might have gotten the same one. I forget which location it was where they fought for 44 years, I think, to stop a coal terminal or some kind of coal operation, and he says, the Vancouver Energy Plant will never be built, and the same can be said for all the rest of these. You just have to keep fighting.
That's right. Don's a great example. He's a hero in this, where he is, you know, he got fired up about working on the coal project, and when the oil terminal showed up, you know, he was ready, and he has been, you know, he's one of the people, along with many others like Kathy Chuddy and this whole group of people who were just prepared and to give shape to this fossil fuel resistance.
Well, we're out of time now, Dan. We could talk forever, so let's do another conversation soon.
Thank you, Barbara.
And I hope you'll have some good news to share with us the next time we talk. We've been talking this morning with Dan Sears, Columbia River Keepers Conservation Director, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we'll check in again with George Paulisner, former Oracle employee turned full-time organizer for the resistance. My engineer is Derek Crooks. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Hugh Masekela. Thanks for listening.
What is it that makes a person wanna stay in power forever? What is it that makes a person wanna stay in power forever? What is the reason for a man to wanna force his will upon a life?